It's Monday, and it's time to look ahead to a very busy week, what could be an even busier week than perhaps we've planned for. But we've got with us Anna Sale, reporter for It's a Free Country, WNYC's politics website, and Marcus Mabry, editor-in-large at the International Herald Tribune, which is the international edition of our partner, The New York Times. Happy Monday to both of you.
Thanks.
Happy Monday.
You know, Marcus, we need to begin where we've begun so many of these conversations in Greece, because obviously the violence there, even at this point, surprising after months and months of rioting there, rioting because of an austerity measure, an incredibly deep austerity measure passed by Parliament in hopes that they'll get the billions in dollars from the EU. Can you explain what's happening in Greece and what will happen in the days ahead?
Sure. It's incredible because this has got to be the most Pyrrhic victory we've seen anywhere internationally for quite some time. The victory here is that Greece will get its nearly $200 billion in bailout money, the next tranche that it needs to keep from going bankrupt as a nation. So that should be something, you know, that the country should be happy about, a breath of relief. However, the Greeks have suffered so much austerity already, that by that we mean cutbacks in government spending, increases in tax rates that a lot of Greeks admittedly were not paying before, and so the government was impoverished by its own citizens. However, now the citizens are impoverished, and with this latest round of austerity, what that means is the Greek minimum wage, on which lots of different wages in the country are dependent, not just like in the U.S., where we have a minimum wage for people who are really lowly paid. This minimum wage is often other salaries are pegged to it, will be cut by 22%. 150,000 more government workers will be laid off. And this cutting has been going on for 2 years in Greece. The people are greatly in pain, and what we're seeing here is really kind of the danger going forward. It looks like right now the markets should be happy that Greece will not default in the short term. It will have the money it needs to meet its bondholders' obligation to its bondholders. However, the question is going forward, what happens next? There is a real disconnect here between the people in the street and the political leaders they have. And the political leaders want to avoid this bankruptcy, want to remain in the euro. The Greek people are not quite so sure, and their upheaval is not likely to end anytime soon.
Well, that almost makes the budget here in the U.S. seem amicable, right, Anna? We are expecting a budget announcement that President releases today, send it to Congress. And although it will be obviously much easier in many respects than what's going on in Europe right now, it's not expected to be an easy debate. What do we expect?
Well, what the president is proposing is what's in line with what he's talked about in his State of the Union.
Right.
It's a combination of increased spending on things like jobs programs, infrastructure spending, paid for in part by decreased spending on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And on the other hand, there's deficit reduction measures that he's proposing, about $4 trillion over 10 years, including $1 trillion cuts in discretionary spending. But we don't know where those cuts are going to come from yet. We're going to find that out later today when the president talks about his budget at a Virginia Community College, and then more details will be released on the WhiteHouse.gov website.
And certainly the Republicans are reacting already before it's been released. And I'm sure it's going to be a topic of conversation on the GOP candidates as they make campaign stops leading up to the votes coming ahead in Arizona and Michigan. What's going on with the GOP campaign right now? Rick Santorum is the new front runner?
Well, let's talk about first this week. There are no debates and no primary contest. So we have a bit of a break here until February 28th when there are votes in Michigan and Arizona primary elections there. So for the next few weeks, we're going to have, you know, fundraising, candidates trying to reset. And Rick Santorum is really trying to reset the narrative here as a two-person race, that he's absolutely the conservative alternative to Mitt Romney. And after his wins last week and some impressive fundraising, according to his press secretary, raised $3 million in 3 days, he's really trying to sort of crowd out the other guys and be the alternative, the conservative alternative to Mitt Romney.
Well, the public policy polling has him leading the pack by 15 points, 38% to 23% for Romney.
Well, yeah, and what Rick Santorum is saying is that he thinks he's got a good chance at perhaps winning in Michigan, Romney's home state. That would be a humiliating defeat for Romney. Also in Ohio, where he sees an opening with blue-collar workers, and he's been touting his manufacturing plan. And so when he looks to Super Tuesday, which is March 6th when Ohio votes, that would follow a Michigan primary on February 28th. So if Rick Santorum is able to get the money together to be competitive in those states, you know, it could change the script.
All right, let's move outside of the country here for just a moment. Well, kind of. Marcus, the Chinese vice president, is visiting the White House and the Pentagon this week. This man is perhaps China's next leader. And so what do we know about his visit and what he's talking about?
Well, this is an incredibly important visit. This is Xi Jinping, who is the, as you said, Celeste, the vice president of the Communist Party of China. He is the heir apparent to Hu Jintao. You know, there's an election in America this year, and there's an election in France. There's an election in Russia. The Chinese don't quite do elections. They do selections more than that. And they have a huge leadership turnover coming this fall. And it is believed that Mr. Xi will be the next leader of China. There are no two more important nations in the world right now than the United States and China. People talk about the G20, the G7. The G2 is what people increasingly talk about, and that's the U.S. and China. What this relationship is going to be going forward, as we see a generational shift amongst China's leaders, going from the engineers, who many of whom, like Hu Jintao, were Russophiles, going to Mr. Xi and his generation. He has a daughter at Harvard. He is very Western in many ways. At the same time, he clearly believes in the Chinese model. And right now, many people have said the Chinese model is, at least economically, being more successful than the Western model, as the U.S. and the Europeans suffer greatly. And so it'll be interesting to see how much he crows during this trip, how much he says America, how much he lectures Barack Obama and the U.S., saying that you should really get your house in financial order. We in China look to establish a capitalistic example for you. It'll be interesting to see how much he takes that tact and how much he takes a more modest tact. The Chinese have said that despite great criticism from the West and particularly from the U.S., where we've said that they've been unfair in things like trade practices and in their currency evaluations of their own currency, pegging it too low to keep their own goods cheap abroad. Despite all that, many people in China will say China has actually been much more modest than many other nations that are much less powerful. Say the United Kingdom, where I'm coming to you from right now, as it, you know, gets involved with another kind of a yelling match with over the Falklands. So we'll see if China is going to be a modest China or if this is going to be an assertive China.
Marcus Mabry, editor-in-large of the International Herald Tribune, which is the international edition of the New York Times, and Anna Sale, reporter for It's a Free Country, WNYC's politics website. That's your agenda. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.